It's not my way to sacrifice my existence to sentimentality. I burst into laughter and had the piano brought to the teacher's house and amused myself for days with my own laughter about the piano delivery. That's the truth. I laughed at my piano virtuoso career, which went up in smoke in a single moment. And probably this piano virtuoso career that I had suddenly tossed aside was a necessary part of my deterioration process, I thought while entering the inn. We try out all possible avenues and then abandon them, abruptly throw decades of work in the garbage can. Bertheimer was always slower, never as decisive in his decisions as I. He tossed his piano virtuosity in the garbage can years after me. And unlike me, he didn't get over it, never did. Again and again I heard him belly aching that he never should have stopped playing the piano. He should have continued. I was partly responsible, was always his model in important issues, in existential decisions, as he once put it. I thought as I entered the inn, taking Horowitz's course was as deadly for me as it was for Wertheimer. For Glenn, however, it was a stroke of genius. Wertheimer and I, as far as our piano virtuosity and in fact music generally were concerned, weren't killed by Horowitz, but by Glenn. I thought Glenn destroyed our piano virtuosity at a time when we still firmly believed in our piano virtuosity. Who knows if I hadn't gone to Horowitz, whether I wouldn't be a piano virtuoso today, one of those famous ones. Immediately, I quashed that idea, for I detested virtuosity and its attendant features from the very beginning. I detested, above all, appearing before the populace. I absolutely detested the applause. I couldn't stand it. For years I didn't know, is it the bad air in concert halls, or the applause I can't stand, or both? For I absolutely detested the public and everything that had to do with this public. And therefore, I detested the virtuoso and virtuosos personally as well. And Glenn himself played in public only for 2 or 3 years. Then he couldn't stand it anymore and stayed home in his house in America. When we visited him for the last time, he had already given up public concerts 10 years before. We spent 2.5 weeks in Glenn's house, which he had equipped with his own recording studio. My dear loser, Glenn greeted Wertheimer with his Canadian-American cold-bloodedness. He always called him the loser. He called me quite dryly the philosopher, which didn't bother me. Wertheimer, the loser, was for Glenn always busy losing, constantly losing out. Whereas Glenn, no taste. I had the word philosopher in my mouth at all times, and probably with sickening regularity. And so quite naturally, we were for him the loser and the philosopher. I said to myself upon entering the inn, the loser and the philosopher went to America to see Glenn, the piano virtuoso, again, for no other reason. Wertheimer and I loved New York right from the start. It's the most beautiful city in the world, and it also has the best air. We repeat it again and again. Nowhere in the world have we breathed better air. Glenn confirmed what we sensed. New York is the only city in the world where a thinking person can breathe freely the minute he sets foot in it.